Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We begin our journey into health and healing with a study from the Walter and Elisa Hall Institute in Australia. They talk about leafy green vegetables can boost gut immunity, help your good bacteria. The new study finds that dietary factors, in particular consumption of cruciferous leafy vegetables, and I know many of you are taking cruciferous vegetables every day. You know what they are: broccoli, cauliflower, Brussels sprouts, asparagus, kale, mustard greens, radishes, watercress. These are terrific for you. They're loaded up with nutrients called isothiocyanates, and these help block cancer from forming in the first place, and if you have cancer, prevent them from spreading and actually reduce your cancer, especially if you're using the cruciferi on a daily basis, and we should be. But unfortunately, we're not. You won't find any of the cruciferi vegetables in any of the fast foods that we commonly eat. You'll find some useless, worthless iceberg lettuce. It's the one lettuce you should not consume. You should consume the green leafy vegetables, and especially the lettuces such as microgreens and sprouts that have the most nutritional value. But in any case, if you're consuming your cruciferous vegetables according to the Walter and Elisa Hall Institute in Australia, a research institute, then you are activating vital immune cells through the activation of a particular gene known as T-BET, B-E-T. Now, these immune cells, known as innate lymphoid cells, play a vital role in protecting the body from infection by bad pathogenic bacteria in our gut. They've also been suspected to play an important role in combating food allergies, inflammatory disease, and obesity, and even bowel cancers like colorectal cancer. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Immunology. And here's what they say. In this study, they discovered that the T-BET response is the key gene that instructs precursor cells to develop into ILCs, which it does in response to signals in the food we eat and the bacteria in the gut. Meaning, in lay language, if you're eating your broccoli, and you should, and cauliflower, and that's very important as well, and even trying some of it in juice, then what's happening is you're getting all this enacted in the intestine and turning on a lot of positive genes that give you positive bacteria and protect you from disease and strengthen your overall immune system. So that's good. Remember, the stronger your immunity, the greater you're able to deal with inflammation. And inflammation, and unfortunately, is frequently produced by a hormone called interleukin-22, which can protect the body by invading bacteria. There's interleukin-1, interleukin-6. This happens to be a different interleukin on how it manifests. Most of the interleukins are pro-inflammatory and destroy everything, and this is not the case. So we're just now starting to understand, according to them, in their own language, how these immune cells are regulating allergies, helping prevent them, inflammation, helping turn it down, and the implications for bowel cancer and gastrointestinal disorders like Crohn's disease are important. So, healthy gut from a healthy diet and lots of cruciferous vegetables, stronger immune system, better digestion. Now, from another study, and this is from the Diagnostic Center for Disease, there's a 95% cure rate for prostate cancer in men treated with high-intensity focused ultrasound. Now, this is in Sarasota, Florida, not far from where I'm at, and a Florida-based Diagnostic Center for Disease, in conjunction with the Pan Am Health Group, released data showing a 95% cure rate using high-intensity focused ultrasound in more than 200 patients at more than over a seven-year period post-treatment. This group of patients had biopsies, proven prostate cancer in conjunction with 3.2 Tesla magnetic resonance imaging spectrometry scan, and they found that this worked. So one more thing that we can put into our puzzle of how to treat different diseases. And so this is not done, that you don't get those results in normal treatment, standard treatment. By the way, about approximately 700,000 American men receive a negative prostate biopsy result, and approximately 25% of these results are false negative. Under the current standard of care, prostate biopsy procedures collect 10 to 12 needle biopsies cores on average, effectively a sampling a size of about 1% of the man's prostate. This approach leaves men at risk for hidden cancer, leading to a high rate of repeat biopsies, often on cancer-free men, which hinders or delays an application of a procedure with this high rate of cure. Specifically, the MRI-S scan allows for an enhanced of the various diagnostic discrimination factors, including evidence of extracapsular extension, dominance of cancer in the side-to-side assessment, and true density of tissue based upon diffusion weight imaging sequence and dynamic contrast enhancement. So all these are just a better way, and they've developed this. Hopefully this spreads across the country, because you want to be properly diagnosed, yes, but then also properly treated. And finally, from the International Union of Forest Research in Austria, forests reduce health risks. Now, for those of us who've lived in nature, and another study, do you feel better being around nature, around trees and springs and lakes and forests? I do. In fact, my entire adult life, I've lived either on a farm, the Fertler Farm, or a ranch, the Healing Springs Ranch, at the Villa Ranch, or down here in Florida at the Paradise Ranch. It requires a lot of work if you live there. It's not a 9-to-5 job. It's 7 days a week, lots of responsibilities. But you get in return an enormous amount of benefit. And it's not me saying that. There's a new study from the International Union of Forest Research Organizations in Austria saying that forests reduce health risks. Forests, trees, and green spaces play a vital role in ensuring a healthy life for everyone on the planet. The health benefits of forests and green trees, ranging from physical and mental well-being to overall reduction in death, far outweigh the adverse effects on health. As health threats such as forest fires are mainly caused by human activities, urgent action is needed. In order to address health challenges, it's important to recognize the close links between human health and the health of other species, the ecosystems, and the planet as a whole. One of the things I do when I'm counseling people who are sick is I don't focus upon the disease. Instead, I focus upon what is necessary to rebalance the internal ecosystem, the immune system, the thought systems, and the emotional systems, taking a perception that is out of balance and refocusing it so we have a clear focus of our problem and, most importantly, our solutions. And being a part of nature, getting out, spending time reading, meditating, singing, jogging, power walking, all of these are important. When people go on a camping trip into the woods, that's a good thing. When you're walking the Appalachian Trail, that's a better thing. Challenging, but great, even part of it. I grew up in West Virginia. I grew up in a small city. The entire county of Wood County only had 40,000 residents. We had one big high school that we all attended, a couple junior high schools, only a couple. So we knew everyone from early in life right through till we graduated and went off to college. I even went to college for the first college I attended in my hometown because I wanted to get an education in business. Why? Because I saw the people who had crafts and skills. And that's what most people had. Most people, when I graduated from high school, had never gone to college. The vast majority had never gone to college. No one in my family had. I was the first person in our family who went to a college. Yeah, in our whole history. We were farmers. We were Quakers. We were the peaceful people, the nonviolent people who cultivated the ecosystems of the Shenandoah Valley. We were also Native American, and the healing that I got, I won't go into all my background, but one of the things we all did, we had Girl Scouts, we had Boy Scouts, we had Cub Scouts, Sea Scouts, Order of the Arrow, and then from there, you went on to become a Life Scout or an Eagle Scout. You spent time in nature. You studied nature. You understand the different trees. You could go into any forest and acknowledge the difference between an oak tree and a sycamore, a spruce and a pine. You knew them. We even knew how to work with them. We took shop. We learned crafts. I learned how to, in shop, I learned, and my uncle, who is a person who loved working with wood, I learned how to work with wood. In fact, to this day, in a place out here, it's called a tiki hut. It's made by the Seminoles, and in it, all the furniture I made 50 years ago out of cherry wood. It's still there today. And so we learned how to use our hands, our minds, how to positively adapt to our environments. And my parents said, the day will come when more people go to college, but when they get out, they're still just going to have a job, a banker, whatever it is. Why don't you go to business college so you learn how to manage your money? You don't spend things you don't need. I'd already been taught that. All of you, every one of you who had a family that grew up in the Great Depression, my parents did, and were in the Second World War, mine were, I'm sure many of yours were, you used your family's hand-me-downs. I got my older brothers, and my younger brother got my clothes. My mother, he sewed them up. I learned sewing that way. I would later do the same for my friends. We learned to be self-sufficient. We didn't have trigger words. We dealt with life as it was. It was an important part of our journey. And part of it was the system of our beliefs, our values. That's where we developed character, morals, manners, respect for others, and the uniqueness of differences. We prided ourselves, my family did, my neighbors did, on having someone who came from a different country or different ethnicity. And we learned about that. We were curious, like children. Kids are curious about everything. Why can't we keep that curiosity as adults? Some do, most don't. The older you get, the less curious you become. So I saw this, and that's why I went to the business college and graduated. I'm glad I did, because I'm able to do this show because of that background, not what I learned in college. What I learned in college and dietetic school, graduating in nutrition, BS in science and PhDs and all that, that would help me better understand how to help you make better choices with your body. But nothing that we're taught prepares us for all the transitions we make in life. And one of the most important transitions you can make is keep part of your life attached to nature. We had a whole group of great people. Thoreau was a vitalist. Montaigne was a vitalist. Maimonides was a vitalist. You have to have a sense of vitalism, the life force, the chi that the Orient gave us. Vital life force. Engage it, embrace it, and therefore you don't adapt. You transcend problems. You transcend simple conscious concepts. You look beyond the mob, beyond the rule of the mob, beyond consensus. You look for the unique truths that allow you to understand life. And that's why spend time in nature. All right? Make time for it. It balances out your mind, your emotions, your temperament, and certainly helps your body. That's it for our health and nutrition today. And remember, a lot of people are now aware. Thousands are going to Gary Nall YouTube or Rumble and going to Gary Nall Film Library or Odyssey, and they're downloading what is called our classrooms on the air. Now, I just did one today on stem cells. It's about 22 minutes long. It gives you the best insight you could possibly have about how to regenerate your stem cells, make them youthful again, so you keep your youth, live a longer life. All right? It's free. It's good quality information. It's not political. It's not controversial. It's all backed up by good science. and I use the citations in the commentary. So take some time and get a real classroom on the air. And it's every day, it's there. And there are hundreds that are already there if you are just now starting. So go to Gary Noll YouTube and see the current and all the previous classroom on the air. I deal with all the issues of life. And I don't deal with politics, nothing controversial on that. But also on YouTube, Rumble, and on Odyssey. We're going to take a break because we have a whole lot more program coming at you. And tomorrow I'm going to talk about how clues to healthy brain aging. We're going to look at a Bolivian Amazon study from the University of Southern California. Did the indigenous communities understand how to use what they have available to slow down the aging process? That's on tomorrow's program. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Thank you, and please share the information with others. Share this with Tucker Carlson, who is a climate change denialist. He's right on some issues, and we appreciate that he invites Glenn Greenwald and others who've been censored from the left onto his program. But he's wrong on a lot of important issues. For example, from the University of Leeds today, 3,000 plus billion tons of ice have been lost from Antarctic ice sheet over 25 years. Quote, scientists have calculated that the fastest changing Antarctic region has lost more than 3,000 tons in 25 years. If all the lost ice was piled on London, it would stand over 2 kilometers tall, or 7.4 times the height of the Shard. If it were to cover Manhattan, it would stand at 61 kilometers, or 137 Empire State Buildings placed on top of one another over all of Manhattan. 20 major glaciers from the what is called the Anderson Sea Embayment in West Antarctica, which is more than 4 times the size of the United Kingdom, and they play a key role in contributing to the level of the world's oceans. So much water is held in the snow and ice that if it were to all drain into the sea, global sea levels would increase by more than 1 meter. That's 3 feet. The research led to Dr. Benjamin Davison at the University of Leeds calculating the mass balance of the sea embayment, and this describes the balance between massive snow and ice gain due to snowfall and mass loss through calving. And all this is due to global warming. And that's just one area of the world that doesn't take into account all the glaciers melting, the massive drought on all continents. So, and this is based upon real science, not political science. Just sharing that with you. Also, for those who thought that things weren't changing financially, they are. I'm going to get that a little later. Excuse me, I want to begin by taking a look at some of the issues that we're not paying attention to. And I said that I'm going to spend a month or more just highlighting the problem and then offering positive solutions. For example, here is a congressional hearing, recent, with Janet Yellen, who was the head of the Fed, which is not federal. All right, it's not Federal Express. It's a private corporation, and they control the money supply in the United States. They print it out of thin air. There's nothing backing up. They give it to Treasury. Treasury then auctions it off, and then people invest in it. Treasury bills, sometimes it goes up, sometimes it goes down. And all this is in their control. None of it's in our control. But what they do say here, you have not heard discussed before. This, quote, that is a lie, according to Representative Bill Cassidy, harshly confronting Janet Yellen. The media did not touch this. It was not shown anywhere that I'm aware of. Let's show you what you didn't know about your Social Security.
Thank you, Senator Cornyn. Next would be Senator Bennett, followed by Senator Cassidy.
I'm going to yield to Mr. Cassidy, if that's all right.
Nobody can say there's no collegiality in the Finance Committee. Senator Cassidy.
Madam Secretary, the president keeps saying he does not wish to have cuts in social. Is he aware that under current law, when the program goes broke in 9 years, that there will be a 24% benefit cut for those who are current recipients? Is he aware of that?
Well, it's clear that Social Security...
But is he... I apologize for interruption, but I have limited time. Is the president aware that when Social goes broke in 9 years, under current law, there's a 24% cut in benefits for people who are currently receiving?
If we don't do anything about it, I think that's about right. But
okay, let me ask.
The president wants to strengthen Social Security.
In the $4.5 trillion of taxes the president has proposed, are any of those taxes going to shore up Social Security? I actually know that answer. The answer is of the $4.5 trillion in taxes he has proposed, not a dime is going to shore up Social Security. Does the president know personally anybody who is dependent upon Social Security, and if their benefits are cut by 24%, they will slide into poverty? It's hard for you to know, so I'll give you a pass on that.
The president knows many people on Social Security.
Then why doesn't the president care?
He cares very deeply.
Then where is his plan?
He stands ready to work with
Congress. That's a lie,
to address,
because when a bipartisan group of senators has repeatedly requested to meet with him about Social so that somebody who is a current beneficiary will not see her benefits cut by 24%, we have not heard anything on our request. And we've made multiple requests to meet with the president. Now, you can't comment on that. I realize that. But that is a fact. And if you've been told to say he stands ready to meet, I will tell you there's absolutely no evidence because we have not gotten our meeting.
Well, I believe the president does stand ready to work
with Congress.
Well, again,
empirically, that is not
true. To address this issue.
Now, the president in the past...
Most people are not aware that the government has been borrowing, in parentheses, money from our Social Security Trust, which the government doesn't put a penny in, and uses it for its war. And, for all we know, using it to give to pensioners in Ukraine. Yes, we are actually giving to the most corrupt country in all of Europe. We're giving money, over $112 billion that we know of, and there is no accounting, there's no auditing, there's no transparency. They can do with it what they want. And already we've seen people who were high up and closely related to the president of Ukraine buying beautiful mansions in Monaco at the south of France and investing in villas all over Europe, paying cash, including Zelensky himself, $1.2 billion. By the way, has anyone in Congress asked how did an actor end up with $1.2 billion, and all this came out through the Panama Papers and villas in London and Italy? Not a word. So I guess you can do anything when you're in power. But let's just say I have a friend, real story, and my friend told me that he makes $700 a month. That's it. He's 72 years of age. He cannot go back in the workplace because of health concerns, so he has to live on $700 a month. Take 24% of it. It's around $168 out. So now you're not dealing with $700. You're dealing with a little over $500. So I got to ask you, how do you pay rent or mortgage, car payments, credit cards, buy food, medicines, have anything left over for anything else? You can't make it. It's not possible. And yet, think of the, now in 9 years, you'll have well over 120 million Americans on Social Security. They paid in it their whole life. We pay in it. It's not an entitlement. Let me say that again for those, including Joe Biden, when he was in the Senate, he tried to cut Social Security 5 times. It's a matter of public record. So here's a guy who says, yeah, I care about you senior citizens. Well, if all the senior citizens had a son like him, like Joe Biden, I guess we'd be living a lot more financially secure life. But we don't. So I'm just saying, this is one of those canaries in the coal mine. If you're living on Social Security and hopefully a pension, but most people don't have the pension, they have Social Security, you could get a 24% cut. And every effort made by Congress, a joint Congress, cooperation between Democrats and Republicans, the president won't meet with them because they want to privatize Social Security. That's what they've been trying to do. Almost every presidency, and Barack Obama also, all wanted to privatize it, turn it over to their buddies, the hedge funds, turn it over to the equity partners, where they take the benefit, invest in their companies, in their favored places, where they again frequently own those companies. So they benefit multiple times, and all the while, you get less. Is that important to you? Then what can you do about it? Protest. The first thing you can do is protest by finding out who are the legislators who came together, good for them, and decided we must protect this. We should not only protect it, but I believe we should take one-third of the military-industrial complex budget, which would be about in the neighborhood of $300 billion per year, and put that in to the Social Security and raise virtually all of the monthly payments to people who are getting Social Security, because the government's been stealing your money for decades, from Ronald Reagan forward, as if it didn't matter. And they put an IOU in there, you know. Well, that IOU is going to look a lot less viable now that I'm going to go into a little later today or tomorrow, the financial situation. I'm just showing you how everything is a lie. Now, I want you to hear from a former Michael Cohen. He was Trump's, for 10 years, Trump's one of his lawyers. And why is this important? Because as you know, if you listen to this program, I do not like Donald Trump. I do not like anything about Donald Trump. I've told you I consider him having the, in my opinion, the emotional stability of an 8-year-old. And he acts out like he's a 2-year-old. He has no filter. He is impulsive, he lacks intellect, he lacks academic standards, he lacks patience, he lacks any sense of scholarship and balance and objectivity. In my opinion, you can think differently. I would never vote for him under any circumstances. And yet, what I see happening now, my opinion, is that what the Democrats are doing, if they continue, if they arrest him and perp walk him out, they will almost certainly guarantee he'll be the president in 2024. Is that what you want? My suggestion is that you do what we did. We contacted every constitutional lawyer we could find, and we asked him a simple question. Are any of the charges against him, especially this payment to Stormy Daniels, $120,000 or whatever it was, after she signed a non-disclosure agreement, is that illegal? And every single one said the same thing. Every single lawyer we spoke to, and these are not partisan lawyers. Many are Democrat lawyers, liberals. They said, this does not rise to a crime, not even a misdemeanor. It'll be thrown out. It'll be thrown out. There's no way in the world the DA, but the DA is gaining points. Like, look at me. See, I'm the product of George Soros. You know, I let prisoners out of jail for rape and attacks, and they went ahead. One of them killed a person after they allowed. So I'm the person that George Soros wants in his position. I'm doing his bidding, and now I just perp walk the president. Even if he doesn't go to prison, think of the humiliation, think of the embarrassment. We hate him, and now we're going to attack him. What does that have to do with due process? Because once you do that, once you attack someone for purely political reasons, no matter how much you hate them, you then open a door where that becomes a new norm. So what happens? Someone gets into power who would do it against the operatives, leading candidates in the opposition. If this happens, it is my belief that the entire judicial system in America will be one big embarrassment, mocked and ridiculed all over the world. This is like Stalinism. Remember Vera, the chief of his secret police, said to Stalin when Stalin was concerned about, you know, some people that didn't commit any crimes, but he didn't like them because they were critical of Stalin. Vera said, show me the criminal and I'll find you the crime. And that's what we have today in this. This is terrible. And Democrats as well as Republicans and legislatures are saying, stop this. If you don't like Trump, and a lot of people don't for good reason, don't vote for him. Just don't vote for him. Put up a candidate that can beat him. Okay? That's how you deal with this in a mature and professional, non-ideological way. So, who's the DA taking the testimony from that's going to end up in this indictment in all probability? Well, it's the person who is his lawyer, Michael Cohen. But Michael Cohen has proven himself to be less than truthful. But here's the person that he told the story to. All right? This is Robert Costello. Now, Robert Costello is nonpartisan, and he is one of the top attorneys in the United States. In fact, he was the chief investigator in the Eastern U.S. Attorney's Office. So here's his story. If you were in the grand jury, and he testified in the grand jury, if you heard this testimony, would you still have the same credibility in the witness that the DA is using inappropriately and politically against Trump? Here he is.
Robert Costello was legal advisor to former Trump attorney Michael Cohen, who made the payment to Stormy Daniels. He joins us tonight. Mr. Costello, thank you so much for coming on. So we can't know whether there'll be an indictment or what's in it. But from the leaks that you have read in, say, the New York Times, how do you assess this case?
Weak, to say the least. I just spent 2 hours or so testifying before the grand jury in downtown Manhattan. And I got my point across, although it was clear to me that the Manhattan DA's office did not want to get to the truth. I need to explain that a little bit. I called them up after I saw Michael Cohen on TV stating things that he said he was going to tell the grand jury and had told the grand jury that were contrary to what he told us when we first represented him in April of 2018. So I'm sitting at home watching these lies, and I said, I've got to do something about it. I don't represent Donald Trump, but I do stand for justice, and I think I have a legal obligation to inform both sides. So that's what I did. I had a ton of documents that I had prepared back in 2019 for the Department of Justice. The U.S. Attorney's Office called me up and said, Mr. Costello, we would like to talk to you about your representation of Michael Cohen. I laughed and said, can I presume you have a waiver of the attorney-client privilege? And they said, you presume correctly. I said, fine, send it over. I'll be delighted to talk to you. That waiver is very clear. And once we had that, I prepared 330 emails, a bunch of text messages. I prepared a contemporaneous report of our first meeting with Michael Cohen at the Regency Hotel in Manhattan, as well as a contemporaneous notes of the interview I had for 2 hours with the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of New York, as well as contemporaneous notes of an interview by the House Committee on Intelligence, who sent three investigators to my office, one of whom is now Dan Goldman, a congressman here in New York. So I had all of this material ready. I sent it to Donald Trump's lawyer, and I sent it to the Manhattan DA's office. And I contacted the Manhattan DA's office, and I asked, could we meet with Alvin Bragg? Because I wanted to present this to Alvin Bragg as I had presented it to the Southern District. I wanted him to look me in the eye and assess my credibility. Did I have more credibility than Michael Cohen? Because Michael Cohen, in my opinion, was lying about just about everything. I specifically told them that there were two main points that I wanted to make clear. That Cohen had told us that when we first met him, that he was suicidal. Why is that important? Because when you're suicidal, thinking that that's the only way out of your legal mess, and you're presented with the following options, that you can cooperate against Donald Trump and provide information that would get you a get-out-of-jail-free card, and you respond to us, I do not have any information on Donald Trump. And he said it many times during that two-hour meeting. I swear to God, Bob, I don't have anything on Donald Trump. And I had my law partner, who knew Michael Cohen for 10 years, on Columbia Grammar and Prep School here in Manhattan because Cohen was on the board of directors.
Yeah. And
when I heard him say that he was suicidal the weekend before standing on the roof of the Regency Hotel, I didn't know whether he was a drama queen or telling the truth. So I looked at my partner and he shook his head and nodded, I think he's telling the truth. And later on, we got that corroborated by the Reverend Jerry Falwell and his wife, who had dinner with Michael Cohen, who told him the same thing. Why is that important? Because when you're willing to give up your life in order to avoid these legal troubles, when they're insurmountable to you, and you're offered a way out, so all you have to do is cooperate on Donald Trump. Do you have anything on Donald Trump? And he says no repeatedly. I swear to God, Bob, I don't have anything. Then you know that you've got a guy who probably doesn't have anything. It's certainly easier to give up information on Donald Trump than it is to kill yourself. On top of that, while he's making these speeches during 2-hour period, he's marching up and down on the other side of the conference table like a tiger in the zoo, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. He looked like he hadn't slept in 5 days. He looked like somebody who was suicidal. And every once in a while, he would stop and point at us. When I say once in a while, he did this at least 20 times and said, guys, I want you to know, I will do whatever the F I have to do. I will never spend one day in jail. Now, what he's saying is, I'll lie, cheat, steal, shoot somebody. I will not spend a day in jail. Do you think a guy whose mentality is that is going to not admit that he has information on Donald Trump? But having said that, the DA's office didn't ask me questions to bring that up. And I brought it up anyway. I ignored their questions and simply gave them the information. I'm hearing rap in my ear, left and right. I'll continue if you want, but
Let me just ask you one final question, if it's okay, Mr. Cassell.
Sure.
If you were the DA, if you were a prosecutor and you were trying to be fair and honest and serve the law rather than a political agenda, you'd want to know that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And I told them and told the grand jury today, I was deputy chief of the criminal division of the U.S. Attorneys for the Southern District. I said, I wouldn't touch a witness like Michael Cohen for any amount of money. You simply cannot rely upon this guy. And tonight, he was on another station denying that he waived the attorney-client privilege. Here it is, in writing, and that's his signature on the second page. So
that's unbelievable.
I guess he didn't know that, and the district attorney didn't know that. And I told them, Michael Cohen has been in your office 20 times and twice in the grand jury, and he forgot to tell you that he waived the attorney-client privilege 22 times? I mean, really, is this the kind of witness you want to ride to the finish line?
Okay. I'm just giving you some information to show you that the media, which is extremely biased, is not going to show you the other side of a story. This does not have to do whether someone likes or dislikes Donald Trump. That's your own choice. It's whether or not we have a double standard of law. Because if they get away with this, and we're supposed to be a country where the richest and poorest person charged with a crime would be treated equally, and we know that doesn't exist. Just look at how people didn't get vaccinated. We had an apartheid vaccine policy in the United States, and shame on that. But that now shows the reality of the world we're living in. So if one way to get him elected is to go ahead and perp walk him and watch the reaction of people who say, this just disgusts me. It's not that they love Donald Trump. It's that what you're doing to make them hate you for being so political, ideological, and all in public view. Your thoughts, 888-874-4888. Now, I'm going to take on a few issues right now, but I've been promising some perspective. Janet Yellen, who's Secretary of the Treasury, admitted before the Senate Finance Committee on March 16th that, quote, only larger banks will be bailed out by the administration. That means that virtually all of the hundreds of small regional banks will have to either come up with money or go under or be absorbed by others. And that's unfortunate. So we right now, as of today, as of this morning, there's over 200 regional banks that are going under. Now, here's the problem. When the United States Secretary of Treasury says we're going to bail them out, Okay, what part of bailout are you going to bail out? Here's where the details matters. Here's where scholarship matters. Right now, the average large bank, and let's say the top six banks, these top six banks are holding in reserve anywhere from hundreds of billions of dollars to the highest, which is JP Morgan Chase, around $2.3 trillion. Okay, against what obligations and against what else? No one is mentioning the over $100 trillion in derivatives, the most useless, worthless, toxic financial paper you can have is a derivative, because it's a part of the bank. So if the bank fails, that means the bank gets to keep all of the depositors' money. Yes, this is by law. Obama passed this on New Year's Eve, the bail-in policy. And then you get a worthless piece of stock as some percentage. But that also technically and legally means that you're not a bank depositor, you're a shareholder, which means that you have no right to be compensated. Now, that doesn't mean they won't compensate you. Look what they just did with the bank out in California. Some people in there had tens of millions of dollars, and all that was guaranteed. Okay? So where do we have $100 trillion that would be a part of that package? We don't. There's not enough money in the world to cover that. But all the other top banks have about $100 trillion with a T in derivatives. Why can't they just outlaw all derivatives? But they won't. Even at their most marginal value, you're still dealing with about $15 trillion. All told, it's over $600 trillion. So you don't look at the full debt, and I'm telling you the full debt, but we don't ever look at the full debt. We have a gross domestic product, which is a fraud, of $26 trillion. And you think, well, that's a healthy economy, $26 trillion. And indeed, it's the largest economy in the world at this time. But a large part of that is coming from credit cards, where people no longer have disposable income that they can go in and buy cash for something. As a result, that becomes a debt to the person whose credit card is being used to be a part of $26 trillion. So you take all of the credit card debt, $2, $3 trillion. So that's not real. How can you make a debt into an asset? So that's the alchemy they're playing. However, against this total income of $26 trillion from all sources, that's not taxes, what part of it are we paying? Well, the U.S. total debt is $94 trillion. So then you have to say, what is the percentage of $26 trillion to $94 trillion? And what is the actual interest on the debt? $31.5 trillion. That's $94,300 per citizen or $246,000 per taxpayer. How about the states? Only one state's not bankrupt. $1.2 trillion. How about local city debt? $2.3 trillion. How about the national debt plus foreign countries' debt? Unfunded liability debt. You ready? $220 trillion. $220 trillion. That's our total debt. I can break it down. Total personal debt, $24 trillion. That's $72,800 per person. Student loans, $1.8 trillion. That's $39,700 per student. Credit card, $1.2 trillion. That's $7,400 per person. Social Security liability, $22 trillion. Oh, you mean they've taken all this money out of Social Security for, now think of this, for their wars, and any way they want to spend it, they can. How much of the $100 billion plus have we given to Ukraine has come from the Social Security Trust? How about unfunded liabilities? $182 trillion. How about Medicare liability? $35 trillion. How about the U.S. debt held by foreign countries and T-bills, treasuries? $7.1 trillion. How about the U.S. trade deficit? $1.2 trillion. What is the average median income in the United States? $36,000. How many people are living in dire poverty? 42,500,000. Okay, let's see how accurate I am. I just got this This is the latest numbers from the Federal Reserve. Number one bank as far as assets, JPMorgan Chase, $3.2 trillion. Bank of America, $2.1 trillion. Citigroup, $1.7 trillion. Wells Fargo, $1.7 trillion. U.S. Bancorp, then it drops down to $585 billion. And then all these other banks, Goldman Sachs, $486 billion. Do you think that's a lot of money? Compared to all their debt, compared to all their risky investments, how much actual reserve currency they have in case something goes bad. These would all go bankrupt. Every single bank would go bankrupt. But if the federal government is saying we're only going to bail out the top banks, that means that the ones they would bail out would be JPMorgan Chase, Bank of America, Citigroup, Wells Fargo, and U.S. Bancorp. All right. That means everyone else would lose everything. You'd have a domino effect and everything. There'd be a run on the banks. And yet there are other banks in the world that are much more solid and much more solvent. Industrial and Commercial Bank of India, $5.5 trillion. People's Bank of India, Construction Bank, $4.7 trillion. Agricultural Bank of China, $4.5 trillion. Bank of China, $4.2 trillion. So, and we're supposed to, what, let the FDIC, Federal Deposit Insurance Company, cover this? But they only have $175 billion in total deposits. Or I should say the Silicon Valley Bank only has $209 billion in total assets and about $175 billion in total deposits. And the FDIC doesn't have a whole lot of money itself. So you're looking at the entire financial structure at every level collapsing in the United States. But what could speed this up? Well, a couple of things could. It's called BRICS. B is for Brazil, R is for Russia, I is for India, C is for China, and S for South Africa. China is reporting 1,948 tons of gold reserves. Russia has 2,295 tons of gold reserve. The United States is reported to have 8,133 tons of gold reserves. And that makes the United States the largest repository of gold reserves in the world by a significant margin. There are other countries. Germany has 3.3, Italy has 2.4, France has 2.4, and then Switzerland has 1,000 tons, Japan 760 tons, Netherlands 600 tons. But here is what's going to decide the future, your financial future, the entire U.S. economy future, the other countries that want to join the BRICS. Brazil, Russia, China, India, and South Africa. And now, Brazil, Russia, and China have something that's unique. They're the top three countries in the world in total gas and oil production. Countries who are now desperately wanting to be a part of BRICS, Indonesia, Iran, Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Turkey, Mexico, Nigeria, Egypt, Algeria, Argentina, Senegal, Nicaragua, Kazakhstan, and Afghanistan. And what makes them special? Why would BRICS want them as members? Well, how about Iran as the major oil and gas producer, one of the third largest in the world? You've got Mexico, a major oil producer, United Arab Emirates, a big oil producer, Saudi Arabia is one of the top two oil producers in the world, and Nigeria is top producing oil country in Africa. And Algeria is also the number one natural gas producer in Africa. So it's worth noting that the BRICS grouping is not actively seeking new members at this time, but they're thinking about bringing these in because they have all the world's natural resources. But guess who's got the most resources in the world? And let's say the 10 top natural gas producers in the world, United States, number one, Russia, Iran, Qatar, Canada, China, Norway, Saudi Arabia, Australia, and Algeria. Well, hold on a second. Of the top 10 gas producers, number two, number three, number four, number six, number eight, and number nine and 10 all want to become part of BRICS. That would make them having more natural resources, more oil, more gas than any place else in the world. Plus, they would have the largest amount of population on the planet buying their products. And they're actually creating factories railroads, high-speed railways, ports. They're creating jobs. When you're creating jobs in over 68 countries through the Silk, then those are your allies. We don't create jobs anywhere in the world, let alone the United States. We have not reindustrialized a single community in the United States. To the contrary, we give our jobs out to China, yeah, and India, the very BRICS nations. Who are the top oil producers? I just gave you the top gas producers. United States number one, then Saudi Arabia, and Russia, Canada, China, Iraq, United Arab Emirates, Iran, Kuwait, and Brazil. Whoa, whoa, whoa. All right? Saudi Arabia, Russia, China, Iraq, United Arab Emirates, Iran, Kuwait, Brazil. So out of the top 10 oil producers, 8 of them want to be a part of. So where's the world going to get its oil from those? And what about the rare earths, the minerals that make your cell phones, your satellites, your jet planes, your televisions, your laptops? The number one producer in the world is China. Number two is Russia. Number three is Brazil. Number four is Vietnam. Number five is India. So the United States is now number seven, but South Africa is in there too. So you have five of the BRIC nations that have the highest control of all the minerals in the world. So just think if we got in a war with China and Russia, which a lot of neocons, Lindsey Graham and the military-industrial state and the Clintons and the Obamas and all these other people want war, they would stop all those minerals from coming to the United States. Ah, so we wouldn't have new anything because you're dealing with all those nations and they control the largest amount of resources in the world. Why doesn't anyone think deeper than the superficial ideological nonsense that plats around in people's brains as if somehow they thought things through? We have thought nothing through, nothing at all. And that's why I'm sharing this with you. Your thoughts. I'm just showing you the problems that are ahead of us. We're in it, and we're not looking at where we're going, and we're going off a cliff. It's like America has got a president and vice president and others, Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, the World Bank. They're all in this convertible. They all are dressed up like the movie, the Louise, and they're going off a cliff, the Grand Canyon, and they're laughing in the process. Wow. We haven't got any of this right. Give us a call now, 888-874-4888. I'd like to hear from you. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Oh, we got about 5 minutes, so I'll be happy to, take your calls, get your input. I've got a lot more on a lot of different topics I'm going to be talking about, but I'm trying to show you the big picture and what we should do to resolve our problems because the people we've elected are incapable of understanding the interconnectivity of life, the respect for all life, the respect for all people. They have balkanized us into warring tribes, exactly where they want us. Well, one thing that I can assure you no one in power is doing is they're taking natural source supremacy. You can. This took me a long time to come up with, over a year just to get the resources in. Why? Because I've got stuff I'm bringing in from Australia and from Africa, from around the world. I wanted to make an all-natural vitamin C. Now, I've got the best high-potency vitamin C from the ascorbates, but that's not from all-natural sources. This is all-natural sources. What do I mean by all-natural? Well, it's naturally derived. You're getting in here. Let me just show you what you're getting in this. You're getting the best of the best. You're getting all of the elements that I can come up with. For example, Kakadu plum, amala berries, acerola cherries, among some of the other ones, camu camu, grape seed extract, green tea, pomegranate. Yeah, those are just some of the ingredients in here. And you're getting a serving of vitamin C from natural sources, easily goes into your system. and highly absorbable because you're also getting 11,000 ORAC units per serving. You might get 100 ORAC servings from an orange. Here you're getting 11,000. The antioxidants are represented as ORAC units. So I don't know of any product that you can buy that gives you more of the antioxidant capacity, which is what your body thrives on, than this natural source vitamin C. Okay? And you're getting also, in the servings, you're getting a good amount of vitamin C per serving, 832 milligrams per serving. That's perfect. So that's what you're getting. In addition to that, you're getting the multi-award-winning, most winning documentary last year in the world at the International Independent Film Festivals, the true story of what happened about the world of AIDS and the fact that there were treatments that were saving lives, lots of lives, and yet there were people within the AIDS community who didn't want this information out. They were supported by the big pharmaceutical industry giving us toxic drugs, and as a result, they attacked myself and others. So those of us who were saving lives, reversing AIDS, bringing people from death back, 1,200 patients I personally did, all of this has been independently documented. Celia Farber, Dr. Craig Mullis, who won the Nobel Prize in chemistry, Dr. Elena Avram, senior research fellow at the Institute of Microbiology, Dr. Robbins, Doug Henderson, and all the Dr. Charles Thomas, molecular biologist. We have all these. Neville Hodgson, one of the best journalists in the world from the Times of London. And I have all these people in this documentary. You've never seen anything like this. You see the best of the best. You see hope. You see reversal of disease. Natural, non-toxic. That's an award-winning documentary you're getting. So you're getting a phenomenal documentary, and you're getting the best vitamin C I could create in the world. 40% discount. Here's how you order it. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, or call Neil in the Vitamin Closet or visit him Monday to Saturday, noon to 8 at 646-926-5430, 646-926-5430, or just go to our page, GaryandAll.com products, and you can order directly for yourself. We have plenty in stock, and because I ordered extra. Why? Because I'm seeing shortages in the food supply chain everywhere. I just ordered from an organic wholesaler, organic stuff. They had no frozen organic foods at all. And half the items I wanted, they're out of stock on for the fourth straight month. And this is a big distributor. So I'm going to be dealing with what to do when crisis strikes. So you're ahead of the curve. I'll be dealing with all of you who are coming to either the health and nutrition segment or just the wonderful retreat from the 17th to the 14th to the 27th of May. And I'm going to have these lectures. I'm going to show you freeze drying because I bought 3 commercial freeze drying units and how easy it is to freeze dry and how you have your own food, raw, cooked, whatever you want, for 30 years. Maintaining 97% of its freshness and vitamin mineral levels, and how to do it so you don't have to rely upon a system that is in the process of going down. Slowly, but it's going down. And I'll give you all the reasons why. But also hydroponics. You're going to have classes in hydroponics, microgreens, mushroom growing. You're going to have so many good classes. And you'll be joined by the anti-aging group, who's also there, but they're looking at life, looking in the mirror and saying, can I reverse this? And the answer is yes, if you choose to and if you're disciplined. But to join us for all that, you'd have to reach out to Lou Anne Panisi because she's screening everyone for both. And I look forward to seeing some of you there. We're out of time, everyone. So give Lou Anne a call at 903-881-7008. 903-881-7008 because we now have absolute proof through our studies, our 5 studies, and we're doing our 6th, that I'm creating the protocols for, that we can slow down the aging process and add years to it. We can actually add years onto it. In the last study, one person, and I don't know who that person is, might be me, might be the other people, added 6 years to the biological level. And that's according to an independent university anti-aging division that has the methylation DNA test that tells us how old each of our organs are. So in our life, how long we can live extra. So that's something to motivate us instead of just looking at aches and pains and gray hair and a diminished and a smaller life than what we lived earlier in life.